Good evening. The President of the United States is hospitalized. Trump and refugees and the U.S. African Command brings war to the continent. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Friday, October 2nd, 2020. President Donald Trump will spend a few days at a military hospital after contracting COVID-19, the White House said Friday, as the virus that has killed more than 205,000 Americans spread to the highest reaches of the U.S. government. Doctors say Trump remains fatigued. Trump was to depart the White House by helicopter late Friday for Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. The White House said the visit was precautionary and that he would work from the hospital's presidential suite, which is equipped to allow him to continue his official duties. President Trump remains in good spirits, has mild symptoms, and has been working throughout the day, said Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany. Earlier Friday, the White House said Trump had been injected with an experimental antibody cocktail by the White House physician. Just a month before the presidential election, Trump's revelation that he was positive for the virus came by tweet about 1 a.m. after he had returned from an afternoon political fundraiser. He had gone ahead saying nothing to the crowd, though knowing he had been exposed to an aide with the disease that has infected millions in America and killed more than a million people worldwide. Despite sharing a debate stage with Trump, Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has tested negative, along with running mate Kamala Harris. Vice President Mike Pence tested negative for the virus Friday morning and remains in good health, according to a spokesperson. First Lady Melania Trump also tested positive, the president said, and several others in the White House have prompted concern that the White House or even Trump himself might have spread the virus further. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows on Friday had tried to assure the public that Trump was conducting business as usual.
The president and the first lady tested positive for COVID-19. They remain in good spirits. The president does have mild symptoms, and as we look to try to make sure that not only his health and safety and welfare is good, we continue to look at that for all of the American people. He continues to be not only in good spirits but very energetic. We've talked a number of times this morning. I got the five or six things that he had tasked me to do, like I do every single morning, and he is certainly wanting to make sure that we stay engaged. I think the other thing that is critically important, the doctors continue to monitor both his health and the health of the First Lady. We'll continue to do that. They'll be glad to provide some updates later today as we look at this.
Meadows confirmed the White House knew Hope Hicks, the aide that had tested positive before Trump attended a Thursday fundraiser at his Bedminster, New Jersey golf club, had tested positive. White House and senior administration officials were undergoing tests Friday, but the full scale of the outbreak around the president may not be known for some time. Meanwhile, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar was grilled by California Democrat Maxine Waters before the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis. The subject, Trump's appearance at large rallies where he and his supporters flaunted public health rules.
These rallies where the president is and the people are not wearing masks and they're not socially distancing themselves to 6 feet certainly adds to the increase in the possibility of these infections. Is that correct?
Our advice is always the same. The three W's, whether it's in any type of activity, to engage in those protective activities, but always in to evaluate your individual.
Have you ever talked to the president about that and given him any advice?
I don't.
Have you ever interacted with the president about him being a possible role model in this country and being one that could either help us to decrease the deaths and the infections by being a role model himself, wearing the mask and having social distancing? Have you ever had that conversation with him?
I'm not going to discuss my discussions with the president, but the president's guidelines since April have said wear face coverings, wash your hands, wear face coverings, practice social distancing.
That's Mr. Secretary, are you proud of the job that you have done?
I don't like to speak in those terms. 206,000 people have died.
So you don't like to speak in those terms about what you're doing? You don't like to talk about what you're saying to the president, who should be a role model to the people of this country? You can't give me any numbers about the increases that are taking place. You don't even know where those increases are taking place. And you come here today and testify with this paltry testimony that you're giving us, and you expect us to be happy. We're very unhappy about what's going on. And we feel sorry that the president and his wife and others are now experiencing, you know, a positive test, et cetera. And how can you, as the secretary, with the responsibilities that you have, come here and not be very, very open with us about what is happening in this country, the increases and the deaths, and what we need to do, and the role modeling that we need to have? How can you come here without being prepared to do that?
I'm happy to do that if you would actually ask questions that elicit on that point. I will gladly talk to you about this, what the state of the disease is in the United States.
California Democrat Maxine Waters and Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar. On Wednesday, Trump had announced a new round of cuts to admissions of refugees to the United States. He made the announcement in Minnesota, where many refugees from war-torn Somalia have settled in recent years.
700% increase refugees coming from the most dangerous places in the world, including Yemen, Syria, and your favorite country, Somalia. Biden will turn Minnesota into a refugee camp.
Trump went on to threaten, arguably Minnesota's most famous American of Somalian descent, Representative Ilhan Omar.
What is going on with Omar? I've been reading these reports for 2 years about how corrupt and crooked she is. Let's get with it. Let's get with it. I mean, frankly, harvesting's terrible, but it's the least of the things that she has done. How the hell? Then she tells us how to run our country. Can you believe it? How the hell did Minnesota elect her? What the hell is wrong with you people? Right? What the hell happened?
Omar is one of a group of four progressive first-term representatives known as the Squad that includes New York's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. There are approximately 86,000 people with Somali ancestry in the United States. About 25,000 live in Minnesota. 21,000 were born in Somalia. Many were settled as political refugees by the United States State Department in the early 2000s. Nowadays, thousands of immigrants seeking political asylum and refugee status in the United States have been either turned down or found themselves in detention centers. Immigrants detained at an ICE contracted center in Georgia have been saying they were coerced into having unnecessary gynecological procedures. The Irwin County Detention Center in Ocilla, Georgia, drew national attention this month after a nurse, Dawn Wooten, claimed detainees told her they'd had their uteruses removed without consent. The women were treated by Dr. Mahendra Amin, described by ICE officials as the detention center's primary gynecologist. United States Representative Adriano Aspayat met with several women at the detention center last month. He's demanding immediate freedom for the women and the arrest of Dr. Amin. He spoke with WBAI earlier today.
Dr. Amin is the alleged perpetrator. We interview eight women, actually six women. Two of them couldn't speak to us in their native language. But out of those six women that we spoke to, four of them have been subjected to some kind of like invasive test by this doctor without their consent or knowledge about what the test was really about.
Do you know what this is about? You know, it raises the hoary head of eugenics on one hand and the past practices in some parts of the country and to some populations of mass sterilization, or the possibility of some sort of fraud by a doctor.
Could be fraud. He's been convicted of fraud and had to return $500,000 to the Medicaid program in the past. We also want to see the relationship between one of the board members of LaSalle. That's the entity that administers the detention center. It's a privately run detention center who seems to be have some connections with this doctor. We want the center closed and the doctor fully investigated.
You don't believe that this is some sort of eugenics plot aimed at these people because of that minority or immigration status and the bent of the Trump administration?
I mean, it's troubling that all of this is happening in one detention center. It may be pervasive across other detention centers, and we ought to take a look at that. And if that is the case, then this is more of what we've seen in the past.
How do you want to see this situation dealt with?
A full investigation for the center to shut down immediately and for the doctor to be arrested.
What about the women in that Irwin detention center?
The women should stay in the United States. They should be cared for. They're still traumatized, both physically and emotionally, and we should give them all the help that they need.
Have you heard anything back from the Trump administration or DHS or any of these people?
They're completely in denial. Today on the floor, the other side of the aisle, Republicans, as we pass a resolution condemning these practices. The resolution was passed, but many of them voted against it.
President Trump's statement that he's going to reduce the amount of legal immigration for the, I guess, fourth year in a row. What is your response to that?
He should really be worried about the COVID-19 pandemic now that he is personally afflicted by him and the First Lady. He should really be concentrating any and all his efforts on the pandemic rather than chasing poor immigrants that are just trying to do best for their families across the country.
The COVID situation, how are you and your colleagues reacting to the fact that the president is tested positive along with the First Lady? What are you hearing?
This is serious. This is serious. And COVID-19 has now hit the doorstep of the White House. For far too long, they've ignored it or tried to sweep it under the rug or minimize it. This is a full-blown pandemic, and it's still raging across the country, and it should be taken seriously.
Do you expect that more people will test positive in the White House?
I expect, considering that this is a very contagious virus, that more people will test positive, unfortunately, yes.
Do you wear your mask?
I'm wearing it right now.
United States Representative Adriano Aspayat, he spoke with WBAI earlier today. The ICE Detention Center in Ocilla, Georgia, is run by LaSalle Corrections, a privately owned prison company. And Somalia, a country in East Africa that's been beset by years of civil strife, has long attracted the interest of the United States military. In recent years, the United States has launched numerous deadly drone attacks against an Islamist group known as Al-Shabaab. The U.S. has more than 500 troops in Somalia and has carried out hundreds of airstrikes in the oil-rich country. A little-known arm of the U.S. military commands the troops and other forces in dozens of African countries called AFRICOM. The military command was founded 12 years ago on October 1, 2008. The commander is General Stephen Townsend. He describes the challenges the U.S. faces in Africa.
Why should America care about Africa? For a lot of the same reasons that Admiral Fowler talked about America caring about South America, although it's a little bit more geographically distant. The strategic access that America needs to the African continent rests on the fact that it's that global crossroads I talked about in my opening statement. There's also tremendous natural resources there, to include rare earth minerals that America needs. There's also a burgeoning population there, and there's good and news with good and bad news with that. It's tremendous potential opportunity for the future, also significant risk. In the past, maybe we've been able to pay less attention to Africa and it be okay for America. I don't believe that's the case for the future. As far as the threats go that you ask about, China and Russia are every bit as busy in Africa today, and for the same reasons that Admiral Fowler talked about them being busy in South America. They are acting on their own behalf for positional advantage, and Russia in particular pursuing extractive ventures. So China and Russia are seeking to counter the strategic access that we need for American security and American prosperity. Secondly, the violent extremist organizations that are on the continent, both in the East and in the West. Some of those groups threaten the American homeland today. Some of them will potentially be a threat.
And that's General Stephen Townsend. He's the commander of AFRICOM. The Black Alliance for Peace held an International Day of Action yesterday on AFRICOM, calling for the United States to demilitarize the African continent. The coordinator of the Out of Africa Network, part of the Black Alliance for Peace, is Tunde Osazua.
AFRICOM is really a very militarized force. They conduct bombings pretty regularly on the continent. A lot of those have been focused on Somalia over the past couple of years. The U.S. seems to have plans to expand that. And we at the Black Alliance for Peace say that in order for African countries to have any sort of self-determination, the U.S. needs to completely withdraw their forces from Africa. Demilitarization of the African continent needs to happen, and the U.S. needs to close its bases. And that's what this day of action is about.
There were American forces in Niger that crossed the border into Mali and got involved with a gunfight with people in Mali, and people don't know about this. What's going on in these parts of Africa, this sub-Saharan Africa area that the U.S. troops are involved in?
Mali, their military has been trained by the U.S. along with many other countries in the continent. Like, the U.S. is very much involved in the military training, but also the ideological training of those soldiers. Mali actually recently went through a coup. Is U.S. involvement leading to coups? And we at the Black Lives for Peace believe that it's not necessarily like U.S. military training or anything, but the U.S. is there to assert themselves and make sure that they have access to resources, that their multinational corporations have that access, and provide ideological training. In the Sahel, there's been a huge rise in resistance to the U.S., and that manifests itself in different ways. We absolutely don't condone terrorism, but we say that it's a result of U.S. involvement and U.S. bombing.
What underlies this U.S. obsession with Somalia?
Somalia is very oil-rich. They also have strategic, in terms of location, that area provides a lot of benefits. The oil is typically pointed out as like the main benefit. The U.S. has been involved in conflicts there, trying to make sure that the governments in place are compliant or allowing U.S. oil companies to exploit that oil and also make sure that they're able to assert themselves. Somalia has been the focus of a number of drone bombings, more than almost any other African country in the past. The U.S. killed this number of people. As a result of U.S. military involvement, war making, and everything in Somalia, there's been, unfortunately, the rise of terrorism. The AFRICOM claims to fight terrorism, and Al-Shabaab came about in like 2007, 2008, as a result of the deleterious effects of Western involvement, of U.S. involvement. They claim to be fighting Al-Shabaab. Essentially, what has been shown, it's been those drone bombings and also just state action against Somali people that has driven people towards terrorism. Al-Shabaab is, in many ways, the result of U.S. foreign policy.
Uranium for the atomic bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki came from the Congo.
The Congo is a really interesting situation. We see that there are many different forces fighting with each other over in the Congo to assert themselves. And the U.S. is present, but also it works through proxies. And then there are also many mining companies that have proxy armies in the Congo. The DRC and the Republic of the Congo as well, they're very rich in natural resources, but some of the poorest countries in the world. It's definitely been a curse in the case of those countries just because of all of the fighting. It's an ongoing situation. There's still people fighting over territory and resources and all sorts of things out there.
Anything like that?
I recommend that people check out blacklinesforpeace.com/dayofactiononAFRICOM. To learn more, there are tons of resources on this site.
Tunde Osazua is co-coordinator of the Out of Africa Network. AFRICOM is pressing for new authorities to carry out armed drone strikes in Africa, potentially expanding the war zone into Kenya. It was 3 years ago this week when four U.S. soldiers were killed in a firefight in the African nation of Niger. It took President Trump 12 days to publicly speak about the battle, and only after being asked by a reporter. Notably, Maisha Johnson, the widow of one of the soldiers killed, Sergeant LaDavid Johnson, said Trump made her cry by telling her that her husband had known what he had signed up for when he joined the military. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Friday, the Labor Department reported that employers added 661,000 jobs in September, far fewer than forecasters expected. Trump's economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, tried to put a positive spin on what might have been good news if it weren't for the overall desperate state of the economy.
The economy is recovering very well. Today's numbers are actually, I think, better than some are portraying it, because you had a couple hundred thousand glitch in the government section, which was really public schools that didn't reopen, and therefore the seasonal adjustments which pull that down don't work. Private jobs are up 177,000, if I have that number right. And that's a very strong number. Let me see. I want to make sure I'm right. Yeah, 877,000. And the prior revisions were plus 40,000. So you're really talking about over 900,000 new private jobs and a drop in unemployment to 7.9%. I think those are very solid numbers. And I want to say car sales reported today were just a blowout number. 16.3 million car sales. We're almost back to the 17 million level that we were at pre-pandemic, and we started at only 8 million, so it's doubled in 5 months.
Trump's economic advisor, Larry Kudlow. Dr. Jack Rasmus teaches economics at St. Mary's College in California. He's the author and producer of The Scourge of Neoliberalism, U.S. Economic Policy from Reagan to Bush. He says the economy is not coming back anytime soon.
19.1 million people are unemployed for more than 27 weeks. 19 million, up from 5.6 million in May. You've got more and more record level long-term unemployed, and those people aren't coming back. Some who were furloughed are being called back, short-term furloughs. We're never going to see the same number come back that were left out, and a lot of those are going to be long-term unemployed. 19 million. The labor force, we still got, 4.5 million people who just dropped out and they're not even calculating the labor force. Yesterday, we had, almost 1.5 million people filing for new unemployment claims for just the week. That's 1.5 million filing for new claims every week since early August. Where does he get the gall to say that that's a great report? You can cherry pick any number here or there and misrepresent what it means and so forth to come up with any argument almost that you want. But the fact is, look, we still have somewhere around 27 to 30 million people unemployed, jobless, and not all of them are getting benefits either.
Is this a V?
I've been arguing since March that this is a W-shaped recovery. In other words, you have a deep, deep contraction, four times worse than 2008-09. When you have that deep of contraction, you don't snap back. They reopened the economy, and of course you're going to get a rebound, but in a W-shaped trajectory scenario, what you get in the rebound, roughly a two-thirds recovery of what you lost, and then it stalls out. A rebound is not a recovery. It's a natural development when you have this kind of a contraction. And yes, there are sectors that have rebounded better than other sectors, but there are other sectors that are still on the floor, and they're not coming back. And we're about to slow once again. There's all kind of indicators. Goldman Sachs Investment Bank cut their forecast for the fourth quarter in half. If it were just COVID and COVID would not have a second wave, then you would have a V shape maybe. But COVID's not going away. We see in Europe and elsewhere, second wave, and it's coming here in the U.S., no doubt. Read the big layoff notices of major companies. They know it's coming. They're battening down the hatches. They're laying off tens of thousands. You know, Disney, 28,000, airlines, 35,000, insurance companies, et cetera, et cetera. It's all over the place. And that's why Goldman Sachs says, oh, it's going to slow down dramatically in the fourth quarter, and it will go on for years.
It seems to be tracking COVID.
That is a force, a factor. But we have like two forces here driving the economy, the COVID, which is short-term, cyclical with the waves that occur. But then you have something even deeper, more structural, long-term. And that's going on as well and beginning to rear its head here in a second wave of layoffs that's coming, which are more permanent, more structural. You know, in the travel area, in the hospitality, the malls, big box retail, oil and gas are not coming back. Commercial property is not coming back. You see a little boost in housing, but that's mostly at the high end as wealthier people leave the cities and buy up homes. But you see more foreclosure notices in low income housing. And you're going to see more defaults and foreclosures as long as this thing sort of struggles bouncing along the bottom for months and months. Both the Federal Federal Reserve and the IMF are already warning about that, that we could have next year, if this recovery is not robust and pretty quick, then we could start to see some significant defaults and bankruptcies that could precipitate a financial instability event next year.
People like to compare this Trump to like a strongman.
Well, Trump would really be dangerous if he wasn't so stupid. If he could only keep his shoe out of his mouth, he would really be dangerous. That's just the best advantage we have.
The fact that he has come down with COVID, him and his wife, what is that? Does that have any impact, you think?
We'll soon see if he shows up on TV like Boris Johnson did. We'll soon see. It's ironic.
Dr. Jack Rasmus teaches economics at St. Mary's College in California. And to update our story, President Donald Trump appeared in public Friday evening for the first time since being stricken by COVID-19, boarding his Marine One helicopter for a flight to a military hospital. Trump walked out of the White House and gave a thumbs up, but did not speak. And finally, surreptitiously made tapes of First Lady Melania Trump show someone struggling with what she considered liberal media bias, as she claimed immigrant detention centers where children were taken away from their parents and held in cages were not really that bad.
They say I'm complicit. I'm the same like him. I support him. I don't say enough. I don't do enough.
No.
Where I am, I'm working like a ass, my ass.
I know.
Christmas stuff that, you know, who gives a f*** about Christmas stuff and decoration, but I need to do it, right?
Yeah, but 100%. You have no choice.
And then I do it, and I say that I'm working on Christmas, planning for the Christmas, and they said, oh, what about the children that they were separated? Give me a break. Where they were saying anything when Obama did that?
I know.
I cannot go. I was trying to get the kid reunited with the mom. I didn't have a chance. It needs to go through the process and through the law.
But here's my thing. Did you hear what you just said? But instead of that, if you just, your messaging, you were so loved.
They would not do the story. We put it out. They would not do the story.
I'm telling
you. You would not believe it. They would not do the story because they would not do the story because they are against us because they are liberal media. Yeah, if I go to Fox, they will do the story. I don't want to go to Fox.
And those are tapes made by a friend of the First Lady, Stephanie Winston Wolkoff, in her new book. President Trump ran 4 years ago on the so-called war on Christmas issue, saying greetings like Happy Holidays were anti-Christian. And that's some of the news for Friday, October 2nd, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI News. Thanks for listening.